Welcome to another Two Damn White Guys. And we're recording video again. Here we are. I keep forgetting we're recording video until I see myself out of my peripheral. And then I look over and there I am. Here we are. Andrew, are you there?
I'm here.
I thought we lost the recording for a second.
Nope.
I forgot you don't chit-chat. That's how we left the last episode, right?
No.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah. Andrew's not going to chit-chat. So we're here. We're doing video, and we're talking about humans. What else would we be talking about? Humans are pretty much all we know. It's pretty much all we know. We're going to be looking at the history, the timeline, the evolution timeline of humanity. How the hell did we get here?
Where did humans come from?
Where did humans come from? And not in the sexy way. Not in the sexy way. We're not talking about the birds and the bees today. We are actually going to be looking at the evolution of Homo. Let's see, which one? Which Homo came first? Was it Homo heidelbergensis or whatever its power is called?
Heidelbergensis. Yeah, that was one of the main ones that split into a lot of different groups. Erectus was actually before that. So
okay, Erectus was first.
I don't know if it was first. There's lots of little ones. Maybe it's debated. Because you got to remember that anytime you call it something like a species, it's a snapshot in time. And so it's basically like the evolution of humans or any animal is a video that's constantly rolling, and there's gradual changes that you would never notice at any generation. But when we talk about categorization, it's just a snapshot.
Right.
So
yeah, there's no such thing as names of species in actual nature.
It's not like a Homo erectus one day had a baby and that baby was a Heidelbergensis or a different species, right?
Right.
It's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? It's just like this tiny gradual changes that you would never notice at any generation. But then we find fossils and we go back and want to classify them because humans have this weird disorder where we try to put everything into a category.
Yeah.
Those
categories to name something is power.
Snapshot. What's that?
To name something is to have power.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, that's it's like a, you know, when you know something's name or you name something, then you are kind of, I don't know, it's like a strange kind of power when you name something.
Yeah. It's kind of like the world is analog and we like to think in discrete terms. So we just sample. Yeah.
What's fascinating to me about this topic is, you know, humans are very complex animals. But, you know, like you said, it's not like one day we just kind of showed up. It was like a very slow series of microevolutions due to the struggles we were facing in nature, and like certain traits died out because they weren't helpful. And very slowly we just kind of appeared, you know, like we are today. Here we are. And so I think it's just cool because, you know, we're learning so much about where we came from right now. There's so much information out there to be learned. And it's just so insane to me that we can, you know, look back in history and see all of these things that came together to make what we are today. It's just so incredible. I think it's just kind of empowering in a way to know where you came from. So we're going to be kind of tearing that apart.
Yeah. And what's the point of a human? So like other animals have claws or teeth or fur to protect them from the cold. What do we have? We're like naked apes with little useless hands, and I mean, we don't have any defenses. Like, imagine being dropped in the middle of the Serengeti surrounded by lions. Like, what gives humans their advantage? What is their specialty? And it turns out that the specialty of humans is being generalists. So they can do kind of anything. They can use their brains to invent tools, and they can hold different tools. Like, these hands are pretty useless, except they're good for gripping a hammer or maybe a shovel or any kind of like tool. So you're flexible, right? And that's the advantage of humans. And so one of the reasons humans probably came about is because of changing climates. So changing climates where there was deforestation in Africa, the apes, you know, were getting pushed to different habitats, and humans were able to come down on the savanna and adapt to a different environment by using a different set of tools and a different set of strategies and using their brain to think about things and kind of develop different tactics for changing environments.
You had me up until you said climate change, Andrew. I don't believe in climate change. It's not a real thing.
Well, I think almost everyone believes in climate change, even if they don't necessarily think it's caused by humans, which it definitely is, but some people don't believe in that.
Yeah, I'm just being stupid. I'm just being stupid. Of course.
I know, but you're not being stupid in the correct way.
That's true. I'm not being stupid enough. I could be stupider.
Yeah, exactly. You're not very good at being stupid, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
You're not being smart at being stupid.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of look at the differences between Homo sapiens, us, and then other versions of humans that have existed before us. And we're going to be asking questions like, could we have interbred? You know, we might not be able to get to the bottom of all these, but we're just going to kind of, you know, there is a lot of information out there. There's a lot of answers to these questions. So we're going to go through the answers we do have. And we're just going to kind of lay it all out for anyone who's curious. And we're going to have fun along the way. That's what we're doing here. So let's dive in. Oh, and I want to add something real quick. You were talking earlier about how humans are kind of like this helpless little animal. I actually joke about this with my toddler. My three-year-old, she is always running around naked. She will not keep her clothes on.
Yeah.
And then she's always going like, "Daddy, I'm cold." And I tell her it's because you took your fur off. Because we tell her that her clothes are her fur. I'm like,
well,
"Do you have
that's
any?
The other
do you
thing,
have any
right?
fur?"
Like humans can choose to put on different types of clothing for different environments, and we do. Like different humans who are spread around throughout the world wear different levels of clothing, from basically none to really thick furs, and that's an advantage.
Right.
Another animal can't choose what they wear.
Right.
In fact, like, our technology is the only thing that enables humans to survive throughout the world. Without our technology, meaning even like clothing and fire, hunting tools, we would be restricted to a small area of Africa where we could just hunt and gather from whatever's around us. And, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about freezing at night and things like that. But our technology is what enables us to be spread out throughout the world. And that's
caused
by our brains.
Sapiens. So incredible. I'd like to see another animal do that. We may not be as fast as a cheetah, but we can outsmart one. We can catch a cheetah.
Yep.
We can't outrun it. Let's start here real quick. Let's start at this ape point. This is Africa we're talking about. This is where, you know, the apes that became people, it came out of, and it was because of climate change and stuff, right? Like that we have initially developed tools. Isn't that right?
Climates, yeah. So the other thing is, don't think about it like apes became humans.
Right.
And also don't think of it like Homo erectus were our ancestors in some sense, but they also existed separately in a separate branch. Don't think of it like a chain. Think of it like a branching tree. And so like chimpanzees, which are around today, are like just as different from our common ancestor as we are. We're just not along a different branch. So it's not like we came from chimpanzees. People sometimes think that, but that's totally not true. It's
not
just
that
if you trace back far enough along the evolution of chimpanzees and along the evolution of humans, there's some point at which it was the same species. But it's not like we came from chimpanzees. They came from the same ancestor that we came from. That's basically what it is.
So what do we say to somebody who is really opposed to this idea that we came from apes? What is there scientifically that we can know that proves that apes in Africa, because of climate change, invented tools that made them self-aware and helped them expand their minds?
I think there's multiple parts to that question. Even apes have... like chimpanzees have the basic ability to use tools in some sense. They don't really fashion them, but they like pick up a stick and use it as a tool and things like that. But in terms of what evidence there is, obviously there's fossils. There's the general theory of evolution, and theory doesn't mean like maybe idea. Theory in the scientific sense with a capital T means an idea that is supported by all the evidence, and there's no contrary evidence at all, basically. So it's like gravity is a theory, right?
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure gravity exists. So theory is like an accepted scientific principle. It's not like this idea that may be true. It's like it is true according to all the evidence.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And you can see evolution in bacteria within like minutes in your lab, right? Or hours. Like, you get a colony of bacteria and you expose them to some kind of like radiation or hardship or temperature extreme. Many of them die. The ancestors who survive carry adaptations that protect them from that hardship. So it's like just like antibiotic resistant bacteria. That's evolution in action. you're exposing them to some kind of pressure. The ones that survive that pressure are better adapted to it, and they pass it on to their ancestors, their progeny, the generations that come later.
I think that this whole beat where humans emerge from the animal kingdom is like really hard for some people to get their heads around, because so much of Western culture is about, like, it's almost like us versus them mentality towards animals. There's us humans and then them animals, and like we have dominion over them and they're ours to do with whatever we want and yada yada. But like, how could that be true if we are also a part of that kingdom and we like came from those animals? So I think it's like there's something subconscious or like very deeply rooted for a lot of people that keeps them from like understanding how we could have come from apes. But like the fossil record lines up with it. What we know about, like you just said, bacterial evolution and stuff lines up with it. It's pretty much like the best answer we have.
Yeah. And it's pretty much a pretty closed answer. Like it fits every, you know, question you might have about it.
Unless you want to just decide you don't believe in carbon dating or something like that. And then at that point, it's just like you're just basically saying you don't trust human education.
I mean, that's like people who say we didn't land on the moon. That was the thing with the basketball player this week. Right. NASA said, come to our laboratory and look at all the rocks that came from the moon and examine the evidence for yourself instead of just like saying random shit.
Right.
Okay, so we're talking about, don't think of it like linear progression. Think of it like branches. So chimps are just on a different branch, and like Homo erectus is on a different branch. But like anytime we talk about this, Homo heidelbergensis, Homo erectus, those are species that like continued often, even though humans diverged from them, sometimes for long, long periods of time. Like,
so they coexisted.
Yeah, exactly. Like Homo erectus.
It wasn't like one disappeared and then the other one came along.
Or like all of the Homo erectuses became, you know, the later versions. They often persisted for a long time. Like Homo erectus came about like 1.5 million years ago, and lasted until like 200,000 years ago. For a million years, basically, Homo erectus coexisted with more advanced, in big air quotes, humans.
Right. They had much more success than we've had, arguably, so far.
Yeah, actually, they lasted a lot longer than we did, and they had a lot of advantages over humans, because humans are pretty terrible in the animal department in terms of childbirth is really difficult. A lot of women used to die in childbirth. It takes a long time for humans to mature. Like, when does a human become self-supporting? Like 12? Like even reasonably self-supporting, kind of
in America, I think it's age 30.
Yeah, exactly. Right? But when could when could a baby mature enough to take care of itself? Like it'd have to be a teenager or something like that. Whereas like a deer walks minutes after it's born.
Right. You know? Yeah.
A baby is like basically born premature. Like months premature.
Have you heard of why this is?
It's because humans walk upright. It's bipedalism still. And also we have giant brains, and that's a head, skull. It's got to push out of birth canal. And basically the bipedal means that the hips have to shorten, and it makes the birth canal really short. And it means that babies have to be born earlier or they couldn't fit at the hip bones.
Right. So they're literally born they're 9 months too early or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Yeah, like for something that as complex as a human with like as much brain development, you would ideally want it to stay in the womb for another like 9 months or something like that. Yeah, so we basically end up with these like completely useless sacks of flesh that cry and are completely dependent. Can't walk, you know, like if it was a deer, it would be able to walk right away. Can't do anything, really. And you know, for the survival of the pack, you want the animals to be able to pull their weight as soon as possible to be able to help out in the hunting and the gathering and stuff like that. But humans are terrible at that. Whereas Homo erectus, because they had smaller brains and, you know, less other development in humans, were able to take care of themselves much earlier, had shorter generational cycles. So that would be a huge advantage.
Yeah, maybe they were more physically fit than we are because their brains were smaller.
In some sense. I mean, they were at least born more ready to be, more ready to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if their final adult stage was more physically fit. I think actually not. I think they were tended to be smaller, but that's definitely true of Neanderthals, who mm-hmm. were bigger than humans, stronger than humans, which is also a disadvantage in the same way. We had basically the same advantage over Neanderthals as Homo erectus had over us, meaning Neanderthals actually had larger brains and were like larger creatures and probably took longer to mature. They were like better humans. And because of that, their generation cycle was too long and they were too complex and they died out because we swarmed them with numbers.
Wow. That is crazy.
So we're like the sweet spot maybe in terms of like humans. Yeah.
I think another thing that kind of convolutes all this and makes it kind of confusing is, you know, agriculture, because, you know, we don't, as animals, we don't really have the same needs anymore because we're not out hunting and gathering anymore. We just go to the store whenever we need food. So we're the only humans, but we're the first hominids to not really depend on any of our evolutionary traits for survival, really. I mean, like, we may use some of our fight or flight instincts to avoid like a car wreck or something like that, but we're not out hunting, you know, we're not out gathering. And I feel like that probably has some kind of impact on us or our perception mm-hmm. of other hominids or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there's some question whether we're still subject to evolution. Are humans still evolving? And they definitely are, yeah. But is it natural selection or is it some artificial constraints imposed by societies and stuff like that? Like, I mean, basically, evolution is driven by reproduction, successful mm-hmm. reproduction, right? So if you have more babies, you pass on your genes. And what incentivizes that in modern day humans?
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear. But certainly, like, you know, a million years ago, if you had really poor vision, you might have died. Now we give you glasses and you don't die. So, you know,
pretty good
deal.
You
don't need them anymore. You don't need the eyesight because we can fix that.
Right. Pretty good deal.
So it's unclear if humans are subject to the same rules anymore. Now, mind you, agriculture has been around for about 10, 15,000 years. That's a very short amount of time compared with the time we're talking about in human evolution, where we're talking about a million years, more than a million years. So it's unclear that there's really been a lot of time. Like, we're basically still hunter-gatherers. We're the same humans we were pretty much that left Africa like 80,000 years ago.
But what I'm saying is we're not really using any of those evolution. We're not using most of those evolutionary traits to survive anymore. And that's like a very interesting variable to think about.
That's true, but they're still there.
We're the only, what I was getting at is we're the only species. We're kind of removed from the equation a little bit because when we talk about evolution, I think this might be getting back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier about people who have a hard time getting their heads around evolution. Maybe it's because they're, you know, too caught up in agriculture or something, and they just can't get their heads around survival in the wilderness or something. But when you think about it that way, all these things make sense.
I think it's because people think in categories.
Mm-hmm.
And because mm-hmm. people can't see gradual changes, it's hard to see evolution within a lifetime because it takes place over many lifetimes as a result of gradual changes, you know, insignificant changes almost in each generation. So you can't really see. Like, the thing is that you can see it in some ways. Obviously, with bacteria, you can see in the lab. But something that baffles me is how someone could not, believe in evolution when you see the variety of dogs.
Look exactly.
Like, all those dogs are the same species, and a Chihuahua can mate with a Great Dane, albeit with great difficulty and probably a stepladder. But those are the same species.
I hope it's a female Great Dane.
Like, three, yeah. And, like, she wouldn't be very satisfied, though. But a few thousand years ago, they were
size doesn't
wolves.
Matter.
These were wolves. These are all wolves. And just like humans saying, you mate with you and you mate with you. And, you know, you put them in the pen and, okay, we want dogs with floppy ears. So we'll take the male with floppy ears and the female with floppy ears and have them have floppy eared babies.
Right.
And that makes like a beagle, right?
And then, yeah.
we did this in the last few thousand years, and even in like the last 100 years, there have been new species of dog, or not species, they're all dogs, new
right.
breeds of dogs created just because we want a dog with like poofier tails or something like that.
Right. To make a corgi, you just take a border collie and a Pikachu.
Yeah, is it? Yeah. You had me there for a sec. Pikachu. Yeah.
They're not real just because you can play Pokemon Go and find them in public. They're still not real.
Or cows. Like, there's been dramatic increases in milk production in cows just by selective breeding of like Holsteins. And they now produce like twice as much milk as they did 100 years ago. That's all evolution. It's right. not evolution by natural selection, but mm-hmm. it's evolution by human selection. It's the exact same thing, except we're making the choices instead of nature, differential survival in nature. But it's the same thing. You can see it in action. Mm-hmm. In the last 100 years, there's been significant evolution as a result of human choices in animal breeding.
Fascinating stuff. We're going to put a pin right there to talk about the people who made today's episode possible. We're talking about Sunbasket. I love this service. There's a lot of meal plan options out there. I've tried a bunch of them. Sunbasket is by far my favorite. We are humans. We do our best. We feel our best. We do our best thinking when we are nourished and we're getting everything our body needs. You are a biological organism. After all, it makes sense. But it can be kind of overwhelming to try to make sure you're getting everything you need every day, especially if you're cooking and you're doing all of this on your own. Sunbasket offers 18 quick, healthy recipes every week, including paleo, gluten-free, vegan, and calorie-conscious options, all delivered straight to your door with organic produce and clean ingredients. Sunbasket takes all the hard work out of the equation so you don't have to worry about the details and you don't have to feel like eating is a chore. Eating shouldn't be a chore. It should be the most pleasurable thing you do all day, for crying out loud. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home, no matter if you're a freaking chef of a 5-star restaurant or if you're just Joe Schmo whipping up oatmeal every morning. Nothing against oatmeal. Oatmeal's great. I actually burned oatmeal yesterday, so I'm one to talk. They've got more options than ever right now, and they have this app that you can just go on your phone and you can do all the ordering from this app. You don't have to go to a website or anything. It's all very intuitive. They've got 18 weekly recipes you can choose from. You can easily cook dishes like Buddha bowls with braised tofu, soba noodles, and cashew lime dressing. I'm also personally a huge fan of the salads that come with Sunbasket. And, you know, the meals that you cook are great, and I love them too, but the salads, especially because lunch is always my most rushed meal, and it seems really difficult to find a good quality salad where the greens aren't wilting and stuff like that. Sunbasket always delivers. They've got a little something for everyone, no matter your diet, paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, vegan, Mediterranean, family options, and more. Sunbasket works with the best farms and suppliers to bring you fresh, organic produce and responsibly raised meats and seafood. I cannot stress this enough. Every single meal I've had delivered by Sunbasket has been top quality. Usually with some of these meal services, there's a little bit of slippage. I don't know what better word to use between the meals. Like, some of them are great, some of them are not so great, but every dish I've ordered from Sunbasket is amazing. Everything comes pre-measured, so you don't have to sweat the details, and it shows up right at your freaking door. You can easily whip up a healthy and delicious meal in as little as 15 minutes. You're gonna look like a pro. They have a little something for everyone, so you can do your thing. They're giving you guys a special deal for listening today, $35 off your first order. All you got to do is go to sunbasket.com/damn guys, as in damn guys, that's a really good deal. That's sunbasket.com/damn guys for $35 off. sunbasket.com/damn guys. Another fun fact about evolution, and then we'll get back to hominids. And you were talking about how short of a time it's been since we've been using agriculture for survival. But, you know, there's a strong link between diet and blood type. And the O blood type is still the most common blood type on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's O is origin. So that would have been like from our hunter-gatherer days. And A and B are mutations of, I mean, there's at least a very, very strong link between A, the A blood type, and agricultural, like farmer heritage, and the B blood type and ranching heritage. So there's basically very clear links between each of those three blood types and those three lifestyles. But the crazy mm-hmm. thing is that even after 10,000 years of agriculture, how many has it been, like 8 or something like that?
It depends how you measure it, but 10 to 15 actually to the very start of it. But yeah.
Let's just even say it's 15. So even with 15,000 years of agriculture, O is still the most common blood type, even though we've been eating our own products for 15,000 years. That's only, you know, I don't know the percentages on what type, what percentage is type A and what percentage is type B, but it's type O is a huge, it's like basically it's by a landslide. So it's pretty amazing how slow evolution happens is the point.
Yeah.
All right. So let's look at some hominids, shall we? Which one should we start with in your mind? Which one is the, the earliest one that, which one came first? Do we think?
Well, so I don't know if we want to spend too much time on like Australopithecus. Basically, there's a lot of early hominids that to us would seem kind of ape-like. The thing that distinguishes the early humans from apes is basically bipedalism. So standing upright.
Right.
Because chimpanzees and gorillas can stand upright for short periods of time, but they're not really good at it. It's not efficient. They're called knuckle walkers because they kind of like use their arms to help with their walking.
That sounds like something that would be off limits to say today.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a real knuckle walker.
Some kind, but they're legitimately called knuckle walkers. Knuckle draggers.
That is ridiculous. So that's like a slur, I think. You knuckle walker.
Knuckle dragger, yeah. Don't think it's an actual like slur against any particular group, but yeah. So let's talk about bipedalism. What's the point of walking upright?
So you can have your hands for tools, right?
That is definitely one. Yeah, absolutely. That's
what's
that's
the other
big
one?
The main one is probably efficiency in locomotion. So it's a lot more efficient to walk with two legs over long distances. And this is actually how a lot of hunter-gatherers in Africa still hunt, by pursuing game. And also they have lower sun exposure. So the sun only hits a little bit of their body, so they don't overheat. And we are not covered with fur, which is actually a big advantage because we sweat. So we're able to shed a lot of the heat. A lot of animals during the middle of the day, especially in Africa, overheat and have to just basically find a cool place in the shade to kind of cool off. But humans, because they have low sun exposure, they can sweat, they walk in a very efficient manner, can walk around during the day in the hot sun. And so basically hunters just pursue them. It's like endurance hunting, and you just track them. You see the animal tracks and you just follow them, and you just follow them at a walking pace, trying to maintain a low body temperature. You don't have to run, and you just walk, and then they run away. Okay. Then you just saw where they run. You just walk over to them and they run away, and you just walk over to them. They run away. And you just keep walking and keep following them and keep tracking them. And eventually they just collapse from exhaustion, and then you eat them. That's the way humans basically hunt.
Is that a tutorial on hunting by Andrew Rader?
It's persistence hunting by endurance. Yeah, that's basically the main advantage that humans have, is we can get rid of the excess heat really easily, have low sun exposure, and walk in a very efficient manner. Obviously,
not to mention we can invent air conditioning.
Yeah. That's the long term, but yep. So bipedalism. Also, you can walk from like one environment to a different environment, but basically it's kind of that long distance travel. So humans are basically travelers. And obviously the hands, you can carry things and tools and things like that too, so that's a huge advantage too. And you can use them while you're walking or running.
So was Heidelbergensis the first bipedal hominid, or was erectus?
Australopithecus actually were all bipedal as well. In fact, even Ardipithecus, the ones before Australopithecus, like basically from our divergence from what we would call apes, not modern day apes, but the ancestors of apes and our ancestors too, about 6 million years ago. Since then, we've been bipedal. Like, the basic thing that distinguishes humans from other apes is we walk on 2 feet. It's not brain. Mm-hmm. Brain obviously is a big one, but it kind of came later. Not really tool use. It's bipedal.
So Australopithecus would have been a bipedal ape.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. Australopithecus would have been a bipedal using simple tools, but pretty small brain. obviously bigger than most apes, but not a lot bigger than most apes. We would consider them basically kind of apes, ape people. Kind of, if you know the scene from 2001 A Space Odyssey with the monolith at the start and all the apes go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like Australopithecus, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That movie is so good. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I love that movie.
So, yeah, Australopithecus, basically kind of like walking ape, a little bit on the path towards humans. And then Australopithecus, like, again, it's not like every Australopithecus led to us. It's that some Australopithecus probably diverged and became a little bit more humanish and then eventually led to, like, Homo erectus, basically. Australopithecus is basically Lucy, I think. If you've ever heard of Lucy, it's like a famous fossil that was found in...
Oh,
African
yeah.
Rift Valley. Yeah. So Homo erectus is like the first protohuman in the Homo genus. So sort of similar to us. It would look like a primitive human, basically.
The renderings of these, by the way, I just want to tell people.
Even though it's not the first one to walk upright. Sorry, what did you say?
I just wanted to tell people real quick, like, if you can, go online and look at pictures of, there's renderings of... scientists have taken the rendering, they've made renderings based on the fossils that we found of the faces of some of these early hominid species. And it's just unbelievable to look at some of the renderings they've made. And I'm sure they're not like perfect. Who knows? I'm sure they're close. They've got to be close, but just like seeing what these, creatures would have looked like is just unbelievable. I highly recommend you check it out. Sorry, do go on.
No, and Homo erectus was the first to leave Africa and spread out throughout Asia, basically. Like, they got to China and India and Southeast Asia. And
now, this would have been what year? What year are you
When they left, I don't know, 500,000 years ago, maybe 700,000 years ago, a long time ago.
And they
ago.
Had tools.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. They had fire. It was probably the first to use fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They would have been, like, primitive humans, sort of like vaguely apish but standing upright, but kind of humanish, like brain half our size, maybe a little bit even bigger, but definitely tools. Yeah, would have used like spears and stuff like that. Would have communicated verbally, but not necessarily a full language, kind of like grunts and stuff like that, and points and gestures, but definitely sophisticated hunting techniques and use of fire.
I think a lot of people get kind of confused about the whole apes became people when they created tools in Africa argument, because there were tools hundreds of thousands of years before we came out of Africa, but they just weren't very sophisticated, is
well,
what I understand.
Like, lots of animals use tools, so it depends what you call tools.
Right.
Like, is
tools
something that you make? Like, you're, like, with purpose making a spear, you know, and you're sharpening it or attaching like a rock to a stick or something like that. But lots of animals use tools. Apes use tools. Chimpanzees use tools. Octopus use tools. Crows use tools. Lots of animals use tools. But it's a matter of sophistication of the tools, I guess.
Right.
So like Homo erectus would have made like compound tools, which is like putting different types of materials together and attaching them in some way. Yeah. But the thing that really makes humans is the walking upright. I mean, other animals that walk upright, like birds, obviously, but not apes, except for humans.
Right. Right. It takes so much foresight and imagination to be able to make a hunting tool or a weapon or something like
that. Yeah, a compound tool. Yeah.
A compound tool.
You have to have imagination. This is the thing that Noah Yuval Harari basically thinks makes humans, or at least created like our modern society. It's imagination, like the ability to invent fictions and kind of like tell stories and project into the future and kind of share ideas and stuff like that. Yeah.
Which that is right.
Yeah.
100%.
I think that's true. Obviously it's questionable whether like Homo erectus would have had that, probably not. And that's maybe, you know, what limited their ability to make tools to some extent and stuff. You know, it's all very nuanced in like the phases and stuff like that. Yeah. But anyway, Homo erectus lived for a long time in parallel with more modern humans.
And they were all in different parts of the globe, right?
Yeah. And that's why they lived together. Like, in order to have very similar species diverge, you actually generally have to have like a geographic separation, because otherwise they'll just interbreed and then it'll kind of like combined to the same thing, right? But if you get Homo erectus leaving Africa and you get humans staying in Africa, still kind of evolving into Homo heidelbergensis and things like that, then you can have divergent changes. So the humans in Africa are changing while Homo erectus changes less, maybe. Still changes, of course. Everything changes in evolution. But then they kind of meet up later, hundreds of thousands of years later, and they're totally different.
Yeah, and each of these species would have been different because they were in different parts of the world. So they were adapting to different terrains and climates and diets and things like that. Yeah. So that would explain why there's such a variety.
Yeah, I think that's true too, but it's also just there is some just chance involved and also like circumstance, I guess I would call it. Yeah, it's climate, but it's and it's environment, but it's kind of just whatever strategies happen to work, and it might go off in this direction versus that direction. Often there's different solutions, and it's kind of whatever solution evolution changes at that moment.
Right. Fascinating.
One of the craziest things about humans is that there's only one type in the world today. There's only one species, Homo sapiens.
Right.
But this has almost never been true in history. For humans started like 6 million years ago, diverging from apes, and always there was more than one type. And this situation has only existed for like 13,000 years or something like that.
I never thought of it that way.
Human. Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
Denisovians. You know, have you ever heard of like the Hobbit Man, Flores? It's an island in Indonesia. There were humans that came from a separate branch that broke off of Heidelbergensis that lived in Indonesia until around like 13,000 years ago or something like that. Like just around the start of agriculture. That's when the last non-Homo sapiens, other humans, died out. And Neanderthals died out like 30, 40,000 years ago, which is not very long ago in evolutionary terms.
Right.
And those also came from Heidelbergensis. So Heidelbergensis is kind of the one that created Homo sapiens, which is us, and then Neanderthals, and then Denisovians. The interesting thing is Africa had different regions, still does, and Africans are actually the most diverse population in the world. There's about like four different branches of post people leaving. There's kind of like waves of people who left Africa and went to Europe and went to Asia, eventually North America and eventually Australia. Obviously, evolution continues, and there's kind of different branches of people in Africa as well. And Africans are the most diverse. Like, people from West Africa are really different from South Africa and more different than they are from, like, Europeans and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of diversity of humanity in Africa. It's, like, pretty small scale. Like, obviously, humans are all very similar. In fact, humans are one of the most similar of any animals genetically, because there's been a lot of bottlenecks in human evolution. So that squeezes. So just a few survivors continue, and it really pares down the amount of DNA out there, like the different diversity of DNA. So humans are very similar.
Wow.
All humans in the world, because we all have common ancestors, possibly as close as 80,000 years ago with there was a Toba supervolcano that killed.
I heard about this.
Like most humans probably.
I don't know why I'm smiling at this. I'm smiling at humans being wiped out by a super volcano.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't. So humans are really similar as a result of these bottlenecks.
That makes so much sense.
Native Americans are very similar genetically, because it's probably a small population that started all the humans in North America. They came across the Bering Strait.
Wow. So when was it? Okay, so we've got Australopithecus, Homo erectus, Homo heidelbergensis.
Yep.
And then what comes next?
Then basically Homo sapiens and Neanderthals and Denisovans.
The Denisovans. Okay, so we've covered all those. We just kind of like, you know, skipped around a little bit. But that's kind of how it appears. That's kind of how it happens. It just kind of all appears in pieces.
Most of those were living like many of those were living in parallel. So right. not like one and then the other. It's not like
right.
humans definitely did not come from Neanderthals, except for the amount of DNA that you have from, you know, your ancestors. Mm-hmm. But they lived in parallel, and basically we probably wiped out the Neanderthals. And now we are the only type of human on the planet, which is very strange, because for most of history,
that is very
there have
strange.
Been multiple types of humans on the planet.
That's mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, considering like racism and tribalism and things like that, can you imagine how history would be if there were literally different types of humans?
My mind is kind of melting right now thinking about that, actually. It's so crazy. I wonder what that says about like our, I feel like, you know, humans, it's not just diversity in humans that's going down. There's all kinds of other species that are going extinct, and you know, not all of that's due to natural selection. Some of it's due to climate change or pollution.
Almost all of it
or,
nowadays is due to human activity.
Right. Yeah. It's all our doing. So it's is there, should we be worried about that? Is that,
yeah,
I mean, there's
lack
nothing
of
we
biodiversity?
Can,
definitely. Yeah. That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
some
of
the ecosystem depend on you know, biodiversity having like multiple inputs and outputs and stuff. And then you get like one species taking over when another one dies out, and mm-hmm. creates radical change. Obviously, change is constant throughout the history of Earth, but such radical changes are relatively rare. So it's kind of like, the Toba supervolcano, or, there was like, there's been mass extinctions throughout history. Like a good example is the one that killed the dinosaurs, but there's some mm-hmm. that have been much worse. Actually, Permian extinction is the worst one. I think it killed like 90% of species on Earth. And this is another, I think, extinction event, a mass wow. extinction event. We're in the middle of it, and it's going to create a lot of changes, and not necessarily good.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll be able to create some new species in a test tube or something, and we'll get some biodiversity back from it. Probably not. Probably not going to happen.
All right, Julian, go for it. Yeah.
I'll get right on that. Right back. Yeah. I don't even know where to take that. I was
no,
going to like...
I think, you know...
I mean, I really like to end all of these on like upbeat note, you know, but that was not the information I was expecting you to say, that things are only getting less diverse. That seems like a real problem. Is there anything we can do to, this is a stupid question. There's nothing we can really do to get back biodiversity. There's nothing we can do to like add new, I guess we could keep breeding corgis, variations of corgis.
That's hardly a natural environment, but right. I mean, I guess just try to slow the loss of biodiversity and hope for the best.
We gotta stop deforesting all the forests right. and yeah. stuff like that. Man, that is just we've gotta get a wrangle on the environment. That is kind of heavy. Well, if you want on the bright side, if you ever wanted to know where humans came from, that's where we came from. That's a complete, fairly complete timeline of every hominid ever. We tried to cover it as, you know, we try to get these episodes down to like 40 minutes tops. So we're compressing 500,000 years of evolution into, you know, I don't know even what that percentage is. It's like 0.001% accuracy, I guess. Thanks for listening to Two Damn White Guys.
We took a snapshot, basically.
Yeah, we're taking snapshots. We're skipping around some facts.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating to know all that stuff. I mean, I had heard most of that before, but never like sequentially like that, like just all in order. It's fascinating to the fact that they all kind of coexisted, and then now we're the only ones left. Mm-hmm, I hope we keep steering this ship well. It seems like so far we're doing good. On the bright side, like things do, like you love to say, things are only getting better in almost every way.
But that's for humans.
Just for humans.
In terms of crime and economics and poverty right. and things like that, things are definitely getting better. In terms of biodiversity and health of the planet, not necessarily so. But I do think there are some solutions to technology, and I think we should remain hopeful.
Yeah, well, it kind of creates this picture of like a like a triangle or something, like two lines leaning against each other. You've got like nature's needs and it's like, you know, nature is natural. So it's going to do its own thing, obviously. And then you've got human intervention. We've got all these, we've got agriculture, we've got factories, we've got all these things we've created, but we are learning to be more resourceful and we're learning to conserve more. And I think the future does look hopeful as long as we can, you know, wrangle in some of these, you know, more sustainable energy sources and things like that. Maybe some of this stuff will turn around. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's constantly been a struggle to work with the resources we have because obviously we need resources to survive and perpetuate ourselves and things like that. And I mean, I think that one of the reasons to shift, we shifted to agriculture is because we were actually doing a terrible job as hunter-gatherers, killing all the animals, deforesting, not deforesting, but definitely like consuming all the resources in our areas and we couldn't survive. So we had to find a denser way to support ourselves. It's like we were talking with Allison Van Inenum, and she was saying how like farming is actually a really great thing for the environment because we can concentrate all our damage into one area and kind of leave nature to nature and get our food from a really dense concentration. So I think that that's true. Like we can use technology to limit the damage we do.
Yeah. We can, instead of just eating animals in the wild, we can capture an animal, take it into captivity, I mean, and say, now have lots of babies and we'll eat your whole family for the rest of time.
Humans would definitely not survive as hunter-gatherers because there are not enough animals in the forest.
No way. Yeah. So we'll just keep breeding them and eating them.
Or growing them in the lab.
I'm still hoping for the day when we all eat seitan. I just love saying seitan.
Oh yeah, I love that. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I love ordering seitan at the menu at the restaurant. Satan. Yeah, I'll have the seitan, please. Satan. Give me the seitan on rye. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been a recap of Human Evolution with Two Damn White Guys. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that. I am at Julian Was Here. Andrew is at Mars Raider. If you really want to help us, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. That is super, super helpful. We love you guys for it. And as always, take care, have a great week, and we will see you next Monday.
Happy Christmas.
Keep evolving. Happy Christmas. Keep evolving. Keep it simple.
Keep evolving.